Thank you for downloading Forethought from the BBC, presented by Carmen Mohammadi from Somerset House in London.
OK, welcome to Forethought at Somerset House. It's hard to escape the fact that we're facing a housing crisis in Britain at the moment. We keep hearing about the exorbitant price of housing in our major cities, how young people end up living with their parents well into their 30s now if they're saving up to buy a house, how there are not enough affordable houses being built. Lots of problems, few apparent solutions. Well, luckily, tonight's speaker, Becky Manson, is a visual artist whose rather nomadic personal history prompted her to think deeply about the meaning of home in an era when homeowning will become increasingly rare. Becky Manson.
When I was about 8, my best friend at the time and I decided we would live together when we left school. And as our classmates ran round the playground, Rachel and I sat on a wall and had long discussions about the home we would share in the future. We talked at length about its interior and made perfectly rendered sketches detailing the colours of the walls, how we'd arrange the furniture, which ornaments we'd place on each shelf, and what pictures we'd put up. But we never discussed any of the more practical considerations of our dream home. We never decided whether we'd rent or buy, how we'd save a deposit, or whether we'd ever secure a mortgage. We didn't wonder whether we'd end up in a tenement flat or a semi-detached house, which agency might cause us the least amount of grief, or which energy company would offer us the best deals. In fact, looking back, I don't even think we'd considered where this home might be, whether we'd stay on the island we'd both grown up on, or whether we'd transfer our carefully chosen ornaments and pictures to another town, city or country. And at that age, the financial considerations, geographic location and architectural structure of home held little significance. We thought solely about how we would construct the internal space and who we wanted to share it with. Unsurprisingly, Rachel and I never did move into our pastel-walled dream home together. By the time we'd left school, we'd made new friendships and different plans for the future. We were two little girls playing out this grown-up fantasy and the moments between learning to do joined-up writing and basic maths. But I've often thought about those initial playground planning sessions. Even then, we'd begun to think about what made a home and how we would turn a house into one. And it's something that's interested me ever since, how we construct our homes within the buildings we inhabit, and whether, when we move on and leave a particular building behind, we retain any connection to it. Are the houses or flats themselves important, or do they merely become spatial representations of specific memories, experiences, or periods of time within our lives? Are houses just empty containers we fill with our own personal notions of home? And as we move around and have to reconfigure these constructs, what impact does this have on our lives? Since leaving my parents' home 12 years ago, I've lived a fairly nomadic existence. My current residence is my 17th, not to mention the countless spare rooms, couches, kitchens and a cupboard I've occupied over the years. Like many, my first home out with my parents was a tiny room in University Halls of Residence, a far cry from this colourful fantasy I'd sketched out in primary school. And you're warned about homesickness, about missing family, friends and the familiarity of home. But no one really talks to you about the fact you're thrown into this space that's almost entirely devoid of stuff. There's absolutely nothing in it. There's no pictures on the walls, no soft furnishings, useful utensils or interesting old books and bits of furniture. There's not that one drawer that seems to hold everything you might ever have cause to use. You're basically starting from scratch, and that's really terrifying, but we all have to do it. So I moved my minimal bags and boxes from the cosy comfort of my childhood home, where every room was familiar and every corner was crammed with memories, into this sterile space in a vast and imposing block of identical flats, rumoured to have been built on the blueprint of a prison. And I spent the first few days desperately trying to emulate the bedroom I'd just left, plastering the walls with colourful mementos of home in an attempt to detract from the spiky white paintwork and hardware and brown carpet. But even when I'd managed to create one room that was adequately homely, comfortable and secure, there was very little I could do to emotionally connect to the strip-lit communal spaces non-familial new cohabitants. We were a sort of dysfunctional Scottish Spice Girls, whose ideas of how we should construct and inhabit this temporary home were polarised. One's love for all things sci-fi and Doctor Who marathons sat uneasily with another's passion for pink glitter and floral adornments in the kitchen, which was at total odds with my love of everything gold, black, and late-night impromptu cider sessions. So while our downstairs neighbours firmed up plans to live with one another the following academic year, we made awkward small talk in the corridors and counted the days until summer. My first private rental came directly after, when I prematurely left university and decided to move in with two close friends. And if halls of residence were a lesson in living with strangers, this was a crash course in everything else. And when I think back to that time in my life, I feel physically dizzy with anxiety and shame. I was playing house as I had a decade earlier, only instead of 15 minutes during afternoon playtime, I'd committed to this game for the rest of my life. I signed my lease without reading it and moved my suitcases into this new flat that had all the character of a budget hotel. Rent was something I paid at the end of the month if I had enough money left over from my wages, like a new pair of shoes or a night out with friends. One of my flatmates had heard somewhere once from someone that if there were students living in the household, I as a non-student would also be exempt from council tax. And I didn't really know what council tax was, so I remained oblivious for the next 6 months until the first bill arrived. My first itemised phone bill taught me that the talking clock isn't free and that phone calls to France are really expensive. Two pieces of information that apparently everyone else in the world had been aware of since birth. A year earlier, I was pretty much adhering to the rules of home as defined by my parents, this framework I'd had 17 years to get used to. In that home, the only letters addressed to me were from persistent pen pals, and fights blew over fairly quickly, as they tend to do in families. Now I was building and navigating this new communal construct of home, where food and electricity weren't limitless. Actions had real consequences, communicated through terrifying legal letters, and relationships were fragile and fleeting, with no unconditional commitment to one another to hold that household together. In the following years, I moved from flat to flat in Glasgow, then back home to Orkney, to Edinburgh, to Orkney, to Vancouver, to Edinburgh, to Glasgow, and back to Edinburgh. And I got better at rent, bills, and budgets, finally learnt what council tax was, but I never managed to stay in one property for longer than a year. This continual transience isn't unique to me. It's no longer the norm to be born, live, work, and die in a single location, surrounded by generations of others whose lives in some way mirror our own. We're far more likely to move towns, cities, or country to study or in search of work. And for a growing number of us, flat shares are the only affordable option to remain in our chosen city. As those we share our home with buy properties, move in with partners, or relocate for new jobs, we troll websites and enter this uncertain flatmate lottery. Add to this the fact that for many of us, owning our own home, that solid base, is a distant dream. I recently turned 29, and 10 years ago, this was about the average age for a first-time property buyer. In 2014, that age is 35. And although that goes some way towards reassuring me that perhaps I'm not the only one who hasn't saved a penny towards that average £28,000 deposit I'll one day require, it paints a fairly bleak picture for a vast number of tenants. We begin to accept we may be renting indefinitely, our living arrangements dictated by faceless landlords and fictitious letting agents. We build ourselves a home in pre-existing walls, aware that if the owner decides to sell or to raise the rent above our available budget, we may need to pack up and move out. A few years ago, during my final year at art school, I read a book by Miwon Kwon, in which she connected our sense of self to our sense of place. And in it, she writes that our very sense of self-worth seems predicated more and more on our suffering through the inconveniences and psychic destabilizations of ungrounded transience, of not being at home or having a home, or always travelling through elsewhere. And this was a bit of a revelation for me, to be honest. That constant to-ing and fro-ing of my late teens and 20s had finally taken its toll, and this unshakable sense of placelessness had really settled in. I subconsciously limited all my belongings to two huge but easily movable suitcases, unable to see any property as anything other than transient. So I started to wonder what the effect of mentally reconnecting with each of my past homes might be. A series of mini mine pilgrimages to locations that had once been hugely significant, but which I rarely, if ever, thought of now. And I thought that maybe revisiting these past incarnations of home might go some way towards informing, perhaps even stabilising, this uneasy sense of displacement. So I mentally moved through every property, visualising every wall, every corner, every door and window. And in thinking about the spatial constructions of each home, more sensory and emotional recollections of past moments and events started to fill each of the architectural spaces. And I realised that the houses themselves were in many ways irrelevant. The memories I'd created within them transcended the static bricks and mortar. However, the moments, realisations and discoveries which occurred within those walls are hugely significant. But I didn't need to physically revisit these locations to revisit the experiences they witnessed. Rather, I carry them and the impact they've had on my life around with me every day. It's been massively reassuring to come to the realisation that home is perhaps just an internal construct, a feeling or a state of mind that isn't confined to one location. Faced with alterations to our living situations through changes in financial circumstances, the breakdown of relationships, or just a desire to experience something new, we often need to reconfigure our connection to or definition of home. But thankfully, we seem wholly capable of doing so. As a tenant, there will always be an element of powerlessness, a lack of control that we have to accept. However, there's also a simultaneous feeling of empowerment. We're also able to give our notice, pack up, and move on if the need arises. During the process of actively remembering each of my households with their innumerable ups and downs, I realised there was always a period of time within each when I felt safe, happy, and secure. And as I've grown older and become more aware of what I want and expect from my home environment, it's been easier to select properties and people that will allow me to feel most at home. The objects I place around me help to create connections to a set of rooms that may at first seem unfamiliar or strange. But the real moving in process is a mental one, acknowledging and accepting the change that comes when we have to start over. And people are keen to rave about the benefits of settling down, finding a location to which you pledge some sort of geographic allegiance and someone to share it with. And true, feeling settled, safe and secure is something that's hugely important to many of us. However, as I've meandered along my transient life path, I've realised that settling down doesn't have to directly correspond to a place or person. In fact, it's far more powerful if we psychologically reach a level of settledness in our own minds, a security we derive from knowing that we'll be able to construct a home wherever we end up and whoever we're with. Houses, flats, are merely containers within which we construct our own sense of home, a movable state we can bundle into a suitcase, ready to unpack and reorder in a new location.
Thank you very much, Becky. That was wonderful. So I think I won't be the only one who's wondering, have you settled down now?
I don't think they'll ever settle down. I mean, I've been in a flat for longer than a year, which is quite an achievement for me. But I'm already starting to think where I'm going to move next and whether it's back to Canada or to Berlin. And I think that's quite an empowering thing to feel that you've got options and that you can go wherever you like.
Becky, thanks for that. I like your idea of finding a settled state within the kind of physical transience, and I think that's probably really great if you can get there. And I just wonder if you feel that perhaps the opposite is true as well, and I'm thinking of people that have been very physically stably located in the same village, and I wonder if probably that's quite common where you're from in the Orkneys, and yet actually psychically within that place travel far and have lots of unstableness as well in good ways as well as bad.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think I think one of the things is Orkney, as you say, there's a very stable community and an ageing community, especially in the outlying islands, because younger people don't tend to move back there. And so you have these kind of pockets of the population that have been in the same place for their entire lives and have often, some of them, never even been to mainland Scotland. Yeah, it definitely can work, in my opinion, both ways. And I don't think that having not one stable base means that you have to be kind of transient psychologically. And I don't, you know, I think it works the other way as well. I don't think that having one solid base necessarily roots you emotionally either.
I think there was the lady there.
Hi, I was just wondering whether you still have any connection to the home, which was your parents. Like you, I've kind of moved around quite a lot. I've been in my place 3 years now, which is a record.
On you go.
But despite the fact I've never lived where my parents now live, whenever I say I'm going home, they're like, are you coming home? And I'm like, no, I've got a flat, it's my home. And they still can't really identify in the fact that they have a room that it's not my room, but it's my room. Just don't wonder whether you still have that connection.
I think until 45, when I go home, my mum will still say, Becky's coming home, and, you know, really think that I'm actually coming home. But funnily enough, the home that I've lived in for the longest period of time, which was from when I was maybe 7 to 17, is my parents' house, which they're selling this year. So that's quite strange for me. Next time I go home, it's going to be this whole other building that I have no connection to. But again, it was kind of that process at Christmas, my mum saying, this is the last Christmas we'll have in this house, and I mean, almost being a bit upset and then realising this is ridiculous. Like, it's my home in Orkney is where my parents are.
Lady there.
I've got an 11-year-old daughter and I do worry about whether she's going to be with me forever and ever. Do you think it's something that we should start to talk about with kids within schools about what is home? It's not necessarily a place of value with possessions. Is a place where you feel comfortable, or is a place where you feel safe? Do you think that's something that actually, as a society, we should start talking about really what home means?
Well, I think because it does seem even more transient now. I mean, living in London particularly, it does seem to just be constantly shifting. But I've always wondered whether people feel the same way about it as me, because I have friends that have, you know, moved around quite a bit but never quite felt that dramatic sense of where's my home and am I, you know, is it in Orkney, is it in Edinburgh, is it in Vancouver or Glasgow? But I think it is quite important. I think that it's reassuring younger people, especially, you know, you move away at 17 or 18 to go to university, and the next few years of your life, I dropped out of uni and kind of moved around a lot. And I think I'd never really thought about those things because my parents had lived in that one house for a long period of time. But I definitely think it is potentially something that is quite important.
Thank you very much, Becky Manson.
The speaker in Forethought was Becky Manson. The programme was presented by Carmen Mohammadi and the producer was Giles Edwards. And there are many more BBC programmes to download for free via bbc.co.uk/radio4.